Welcome to Disruptive Successor, a show for next generation leaders in family businesses and entrepreneurs who want to disrupt the status quo and take their existing business to a whole new level. We all know that what got us here isn't going to get us there. This show will provide inspiration, advice, and resources to help you create massive impact.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at thegoldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Hi, it's Jonathan Goldhill. Welcome back to another episode of the Disruptive Successor Show. And today I have the unique opportunity of interviewing someone who's in an industry where I've spent many years coaching, and someone whose story comes to me at a time when his story is very much like a typical client of mine. Scott Lisak is a team-oriented leader, passionate about bettering the green and snow industries. People First defines Scott's leadership style, constantly building his team's physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and financial health through morning motivational texts and constant communication. Scale first and grow second is what has gotten Scott's business to the level it is, understanding the key positions, systematizing and building processes to carry out the company's goals. So Scott, you have 15 employees, you're $1.3 million in revenue. You've scaled this thing from $287,000 from your first year, or first couple of years. And what's unique about you is as a father-son business, your father was your angel. He basically financed it. You came out of Penn State's like landscape contracting program, and you hit the ground running and you approached it really different. And today I want to talk about how you approach your business, because you're not your everyday average landscaper. So welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So, first of all, the fact that you're very people first, I mean, you know, a lot of people give lip service to that, but you really take it to the nth degree, like talking about physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and financial health. That means like you're like a father and coach to all of these people that come to work for you. I mean, tell us a little bit more about what that looks like in your business.
Absolutely. People first, positive mindset, positivity, leadership. These are all have essentially become buzzwords at this point. A lot of people want to embrace the concepts, and a lot of people don't fully understand the concepts. My goal is to bridge that gap, make sure that we are actually embracing being people first, truly putting our people ahead. Our organization is nothing without the people that drive it. I'm one person sitting here. We are truly led from within rather than the top. So we need to help the breed and build the leaders within. And part of that is the physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and financial well-being. All five of those key characteristics are really important to living a good life and staying motivated for both your home and work life. I've experienced that personally, and that's what gave me the drive to spread that to more people. And what better avenue to do it than my own business?
Well, I think that's really admirable. And I take it that you had some life transforming experience that led you to believe that these are really important things, and that this is your like pay it forward gift to other people. But as well, you know that you'll get the most out of them. So tell us a little bit about what was your life transforming experience that got you to this place, or where did you get all this stuff? Like, this isn't what they taught at Penn State Landscape Contracting School. I'll put my money down on that one.
Absolutely. I always answered questions of this nature. And similarly, the best education I got in college was the ability to learn. I don't use too much of my degree anymore. I am not boots on the ground landscaper anymore. I'm building a team, building a culture. So that's not necessarily skills that I learned through the degree that I have. However, I learned how to learn. I learned how to network. I learned how to grow my mind and really notice that sky is the limit. I can go anywhere I want to. I've always had a dream of building a high quality, high level, large landscape company. From the time I started on the definition of large has definitely changed and grown pretty much every year, if not every month, once we see our capabilities. So throughout, I'd say the mid 2000 teens, I really wanted to push and start growing the company. With that, I had a very eye-opening experience that a lot of my resistance was me. I needed to change. I was the first thing that needed work before the company could even go anywhere. So with that, I learned that I had to change a lot of my habits, change a lot of my physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and financial health. With that, I was able to pinpoint a couple areas that were really holding me back. Diet. I've always been a very active person, very physically fit person. And I noticed myself being 230 pounds instead of 175. And I was like, whoa, what happened there? Drinking was another big one for me. The beers at the end of the day, and that was just a distraction. So 2018 time period, I made a commitment. At this point, I was a father of two children, a husband, and a business owner. I had a lot of people that I was supporting, and I realized that I needed to make a change myself to make sure that I could give everybody that I was surrounded with what I want from myself. So I decided to get healthy, decided to quit drinking. I decided to get more physically active again, pick up some better hobbies instead of destructive hobbies. And from there, I grew. And that was the year that you referenced in the beginning. We were at $267,000 in revenue. And it was either fly or die at that point in time. So I worked on me first. And the business really kind of followed suit without even having to do too much work in the beginning stages of it. Everybody that I was leading noticed my changes, and it motivated them to change as well, motivated them to trust me on a whole new level than they ever trusted me as a leader. So from there, that was really a one-year transition for me to move beyond my limitations that I was setting for myself. And with that experience, I learned how to develop a new mindset, a new thought process, really learned how much I didn't know. The more you learn, the more you know you don't know. I fully embraced that concept. So I started reading a lot, started listening to audiobooks while I was driving instead of listening to music, and just became a sponge. I couldn't get enough information into my head. And fast forward to today, that has done nothing but accelerated. I listen.
Oh, we lost your voice there for a second. Sorry, you listen.
I listen to audiobooks about one a week at this point, and I cannot get enough information into my head. I want to continue to grow, continue to make sure I'm being the best person I can, and the only way to do that is continue to learn.
Okay, so let's dissect this a little bit for other people, because you're a young man, and this is a insight that some people never come to. Was there an inflection point, some point where, I know you said you hit 230, I know you said you were drinking, but like, I mean, was there like an inflection point that you could share? For most people, it would be like, I hit bottom, I had a DUI, and then I ended up in jail. I knew I had to change, let me just ask that simple question. Was there an inflection point? What was it that just flipped the switch? Like, how did this happen?
Absolutely. So my bottom was directly related around the drinking. I knew it was a problem from really about 2013 on. Convinced myself that I was drinking the way that everybody else does, and really knew on a subconscious level at that point that I wasn't, and I was doing a lot more. And fast forward a couple of years, it just continued to progress. You know, there's a lot more to the story, but we could talk about that for hours. And by 2018, I really hit my bottom. It got to the point that I was just drinking far more than anybody ever should. And I was out of control with it. I couldn't control myself. Risked losing my business, risked losing my beautiful wife, which in turn would take my children as well, and risked really living a life that I did not want to live. So that was a turning point for me. I knew that at that point I had to change. I chose to go to rehab. So I went to a rehab facility to quit drinking at that point in time. And that was my bottom. I knew my capabilities. I have always been the guy that has a smile on my face from the time I was a kid and getting compliments from that. And I was no longer that person. And I did not like it. I was letting everybody around me down. And I needed to build back up. And that truly was my bottom and made me recognize that.
Good. Okay. Well, that's great. And congratulations on making that transformation. I think that's huge. I've known a lot of people who have hit bottom, and I've unfortunately known a few people who've hit bottom and keep bouncing along that bottom. I'm sure you've known them too. So let's talk about your leadership style and your development of your people, because I'm wondering, do you only hire people who show this incredible potential to develop themselves, like an aptitude, a hunger, or do you only hire people who have already, you know, done, like shown, like impress people that this is something I want to do? I mean, how much risk are you willing to take when you hire people in terms of where their potential personal development is?
So with my personal experience, I know that anybody has the ability to build themselves back up. I like to give back in the hiring process. Now, there are limitations to that for sure. Somebody comes in to interview with me, doesn't have the proper image, didn't take care of themselves, shows up late. I'm a stickler for time. If you're on time, you're on time. If you're early, you're early. If you're late, you're late. And I like being on time precisely. So, you know, I judge that. I also ask quite a few psychographic level questions just about their personal lives, problem solving skills, how their brain works in a way that isn't really known to the people. So just problem solving skills. How do you handle conflict? How do you handle this specific conflict if relating to employee to employee or client to employee relations? And I really judge my decision on that. Everybody has the opportunity to be good. I would hire a felon who is turning his life around and really showing me that he's on the right path, have my guards up to make sure that we keep an eye on that. But I'll give him an opportunity because everybody can turn their life around. And at the same time, your high school, college graduate, whatever you want to say, coming from a wealthy family and coming in, giving me a completely different impression, I wouldn't hire. So I'm very selective, but not in a judgmental way.
I think that's really admirable and something that a lot of people can do, get takeaways from. So now let's talk about, you've got your team on board. How do you get these messages out from a tactical standpoint? How do you do it? What is it that you're, so help people with, like, you know, what are the tools that you use? And then from a strategic standpoint, like, what are you trying to affect in terms of a result, a motivation, an outcome? Where do you get your content? Like, so tell us a little bit, give us some of your secrets.
So what I do is it starts on the initial contact, your initial email after I get a resume, initial phone call that we have. The statement we use is that we are a group of like-minded green industry professionals passionate about bettering ourselves and our industry alike. That is where it all starts before you're even an employee. We plant that seed and tell them exactly what this team is all about. That recurs throughout the entire interview process, pre-hire and post-hire. From there, we live it. You can see it. You come in the morning for our rollout. Our guys are smiling at 6:30 in the morning instead of grumpy and, you know, I don't want to put us on a pedestal. Of course, there's the grumpy mornings and the grumpy guys every now and then. But overall, the general trend is a happy culture here. So with that, we have the 7 a.m. rollout every morning, 7 on the nose to 7:10. We share a message dealing with training around what we're doing that day, dealing with coping with what that job is going to take that day, dealing with all of this physical emotional, mental, spiritual, and financial health. We deal with it and we integrate it directly into what the day's task is going to be. We talk about that every morning. In addition, I send out personally a text message to the entire team. We have a group text that has every employee that we have in it, and one goes out 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. Sunday, we take a day off. But those messages, again, are just anything that's inspiring me for the day, largely based from the audiobooks that I'm listening to. Get a lot of inspiration from Grant Cardone, Tony Robbins, Ray Dalio, some of the bigger names, Robert Kiyosaki. I dabble in investing and, just really build some of the financial principles to pass to our guys. Because quite frankly, the money that is in the green industry is growing. There's a good amount of money, and it's very important to have everybody from a labor position up understand how to manage their money to really fulfill their life. The reality of our generation is Social Security is probably not going to be there. Reliance on the government retirement is probably not going to be there. I want to make sure our guys know that. The ones that are 18, the ones that are 40, doesn't really matter what your age is. You need to understand that, and you need to understand what to do with your money. And that in turn creates an attitude of calmness, a little bit of, wow, this guy really cares about us. This leadership team, this culture in this company really cares about us. And it's not just me. Our entire upper leadership team takes the same approach.
It's fantastic. And so where do you think you learned some of this besides before the books, before the inspirational speakers and motivational folks? I mean, is this something you learned from your family? Just kind of going back to your childhood, you said you had a smile on your face always as a kid. Like, is this something that your dad embraced or your dad's dad or, your mom? Like, tell us a little bit about,
absolutely.
Your childhood,
My upbringing was fantastic. I had a phenomenal family, very active aunts and uncles and cousins and parents. No divorces in our family. So from top to bottom, there hasn't been a single divorce in my family. And we have just always been very family oriented, very open communicators. Talk about the good and the bad. And with that, I really learned a skill for communication. I would say that's where it started. I also come from a family of, I'll call it old school entrepreneurs. My dad owned a business, a consulting company, doing some really off the walls terrorism response and hazardous materials specialist for State Department, FBI, National Fire Academy, all kinds of just an off the wall career that was really awesome to witness growing up. And my grandfather had a barbershop. Both of them were one-man operations, entrepreneurial. My dad, especially, he has written books, textbooks. He essentially invented the term hazmat and hazmat response in the fire service on a national basis back in the late 70s and early 80s with a group of other professionals. And, that is really cutting-edge entrepreneurial thought process. At the same time, I call it the old school entrepreneur because they were one-man shows. They never grew real businesses around it, never really scaled. And they were the guys that had the backbreaking work and the job for their entire lives. It was awesome to watch. I got my work ethic from that. I got my drive from that. Another area that is definitely worth mentioning is I was a competitive cyclist at a young age. I started racing bicycles, pedal bikes, at 10 years old, and I did really well. I have multiple national titles and medals. I was racing on a international professional level. It's called a Category 1 professional on the track by the time I was 15. So a lot of my mindset came from the grit and determination that took to get to that athletic level at a young age. I also, that's a double-edged sword because I chose to stop that when I was as good as I was and most likely on an Olympic track. But I recognized that professional cycling wasn't professional football. I didn't have a career in that. That was going to be scraping pennies and scraping sponsorships. And when I was done, I was done. So I recognized that at an early age and realized I didn't want that for the rest of my life. It was tough, but I stopped that sport at that point in time as well. my uncles as well. They were always involved as well, kind of as other father figures. My one uncle taught me how to hunt and would take me out on hunting trips. And just having the positive men and women in my life really driving me to learn and motivating me to do more things and encouraging me through everything, successes and failures that I had, just encouraging me constantly, really built my happy-go-lucky attitude and my drive to want to do more.
I think it's great. It's a great story. And you are a poster child or adult, rather, example of, you know, what I like to teach with my clients, which is that it starts a lot in the brain. It's what's in between your two ears. And gosh, I know I've struggled with that in my own career as an adult. And I know sometimes I need to practice more what I'm preaching. And there's a lot that I'm speaking about, so it's hard to practice at all. I know that's challenging, but I think that your approach is really very refreshing. So let me share something that I do with all of my clients is make sure that they have a clear purpose, what we used to call a mission. So we call it a core purpose. And usually I'm grabbing from the Simon Sinek, you know, start with why. I'm sure you've seen the video, read the book. And then I get into core values and I make sure they have a handful of core values that are things that basically they live and die by, meaning they hire and fire by them. Meaning if people violate the core values that they're voted off the island. So I'm wondering, are those types of things, core values and core purpose, baked into your business? Are they formalized? Where does your company sit with those two concepts?
So right now it's a work in progress. That's really what I am working on right now, working on writing new processes and policies and procedures to go along with it. And all of everything we're talking about right now is going to be incorporated with that. This year, 2021, is the first year that I am completely removed from the operations of the business. I'm sitting back and working on the business. I have a sales team, I have an operations team, management team, and we have our field team. So I am not relied on for anything else in the business other than building and making the business grow. Our leadership team and our sales team really support that and have seen what it's doing for the company's growth. So to directly answer your question, that is currently exactly what I'm working on, and that is the work in progress.
That's amazing. And so with a company of your size, you're able to actually spend almost 100% working on the business. I mean, do you have any idea how rare that is in any industry of a business your size? Yeah, I mean, I see it with like guys that are going after venture capital backed money, and you know, they once they get their first million or 5 million or whatever, you know, they can continue. They can, you know, scale out, fill out their infrastructure with a lot of people. But you're only like 15 people. Makes it hard to believe that's a company of your size, that you're not out in the field, either selling projects, managing projects. So you must have done a tremendous job of training and hiring the right people.
Well, thank you. I would say we have two key players that definitely is more on the hiring side than training for me. Just two guys that really are willing to run with it to the point that we will be doing some profit sharing with them in the process of buying my father out at this point. And when that happens, we're going to get an agreement, not give them any ownership, but give them a profit sharing percentage because they really, those two guys are the ones that make this possible.
That's awesome. So let's talk actually about this is a show about family businesses and your father was the angel investor. Was he actively involved in the business while you were growing it during the early years or even today? Is he active at all?
He was active through the early years. When I was in college, we were a very small mom and pop shop at that point, and he kept it afloat while I was in school. I owe the survival of the business to him through that period of time. Post-graduation, it was a mixture. I'd say probably 2 years post-graduation, he was working out in the field with me and we had one or two other employees and we were really building patios and getting dirty and having fun and, you know, kind of the the glory days of the work and not so much on the money, the most stressful financial days that we had during that time. And got to a point that he was getting older, getting to the point that we just recognized, you know, you shouldn't be out here doing this physical work. So let's replace that. And again, my dad's driven. So that was a tough thing to get him to do. But we grew from there then. And we got him into that position to just kind of sit back and use his intellectual knowledge. He has a very awesome question everything attitude. At times in my younger years, and even today, it is infuriating, but the results of his questioning everything are always worth the infuriation of what he asks. So I appreciate that about him. The older I get and the more experience I have, the more I appreciate that trait.
P.S., by the way, us consultants do have a way of asking a lot of questions. and I imagine it can be a little infuriating, but I think it's always for the positive. But so I want to understand the transition from him being in the field to working on the business. And same thing for you. I mean, like, at what point were you guys able to get out of the technical trenches and get into the sort of leadership, you know, working on the business?
Absolutely. And I'll start with him first. It became apparent about halfway through my college education that I knew a whole lot more about the landscape industry than he did. So we recognized that. And I started doing some of the sales work. I started transitioning how to build the teams, where we needed to go, and truly building the image of what the company would be in the future. At that time, it was all in our heads and all conversational, but it was still building the image. Got to the point that he just physically shouldn't have been in the field. So we took over. And by that point, we had some employees that we were able to do that. And from there, he really kind of started to step back. Always a silent partner, silent leader, but never fully active after that point in time, which is when I started to take over. And I have always been passionate about leadership. Always thought it was, I'm going to accomplish leadership. I'm going to be a leader. And over the years, after reading more about it and learning that leadership is truly a concept and a never-ending goal, you just have to continue developing it. So that was really powerful for me, being given the reins, being given the trust of essentially his investment at the point in time. I invested time. I didn't invest money. He invested money and time. So he was arguably more invested than me at this point in time. And it was like, hey, you're doing pretty well. Why don't you just take over and see where it goes? So I did. And we started moving forward. And that leads us into that era of getting stuck. And that was when I started recognizing that I had to change to really progress any further.
Right. But how did you physically remove yourself from being out in the field and doing the sales and, you know, managing the jobs and doing the scheduling and doing the estimating and, you know, all those things that owners complain and cry to me about and say, I can't give up this. I can't find anyone who can do that well, or I have to do it, or if I don't get it done, you know, it's, I'm sure you've heard all the excuses in the world or could imagine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that answer to that question comes down to one word, trust. Mm-hmm. Got to trust everybody else, especially in small companies. This might be hard for the wrong person to hear right now, but owners are micromanagers. They want to have their fingers in absolutely everything. And breaking that cycle and getting away from the micromanagement and trusting other people to do some of the tasks as well as you can. And guess what? They're going to fail and they're going to mess up, but that's okay. That's how we all learn. So you have to embrace that failure, coach them through that failure and build them up to do it as well as you can. And my experience now, fast forward to where we are today, everybody I have trusted to do something that I was doing before is doing it a whole lot better than I was because they're doing that one task. I was doing a million tasks. And that difference right there has been phenomenal. But it comes down to coaching the people and embracing the failure. Failure is necessary for growth. We won't grow without failures. Every success, everybody puts a shining star around, oh, look how successful this person is. Look at this success. Look at what they did. You don't see the 500 failures that happened before that one success to actually get there. And that's the part that's missing in a lot of people's thought process. There's no perfection doesn't exist. It's not out there. So you have to constantly work. You have to take the failures. And we like to say in our organization, we're going to put the fire out when it's after it starts, and we're going to extinguish it so well that it never reignites. So we come up with solutions to try and make sure that those fires don't reignite. And of course, sometimes they do reignite, but then we revisit it again and figure out what went wrong with the solution that we had in place to make it never reignite. And it's a team effort at that point. Everybody from top to bottom in the organization shares this. And our newest laborer knows that he has the ability to make some decisions, and he doesn't have to ask somebody else to make that decision. And that's where the power truly comes. We're truly starting to experience that from everybody. And I'm excited to see where it goes with the scale from here, and as we continue to grow and have everybody coaching everybody within the organization.
Well, I think you have a great mindset, and I think I like to give Dad's credit where credit is due. He trusted you by investing in you as a, you know, college student, I guess, at that point, maybe even it was before. And he put money into a business that, you know, you didn't even have the time to run if you were going to be doing your schoolwork. And you're doing that same thing with your people, and, you know, that you can sit back and really think about the business is a really powerful place to be. So tell me, as you look into your crystal ball and think forward, you know, what do you see for yourself, for your business, for your team? You know, I know in the landscape industry, labor is tough to come by. It's a big issue, has been for a long time. But tell us a little bit about what your vision is.
So our vision is just to continue growing. My personal vision is I see myself growing this company to the point that I am completely removed. I'll be a board member, not even the CEO anymore. Hire an external CEO, as I'm calling it right now, but really just hiring a CEO to take my position and continue to grow the company at some point. And that will give me the flexibility to move forward and do some other things. With the company on a whole, yes, labor is huge. That's a limiting factor right now. And I hate to say it, I'm staying very optimistic about it. But labor is really tough to find. So rather than letting that get me down, I'm determined to figure it out. I want to figure out how I can get more. I want to figure out how I have to get more people. If that means paying them double what I'm paying them, we're going to figure it out on the sales side on how to sell our clients, because we're not the only company. We're not the only industry having this issue. So this is a bigger problem than just our company. And I want to be on the cutting edge of the solution for that. And there is no solution yet. Nobody has come up with anything. The people are out there. They don't just disappear. So the people that aren't working are out there somewhere. And are those the people we truly want working in our organization, though? And that's the big question that I'm asking. We're in this time of the great resignation, I guess they're calling it. So I want to tap into other avenues. I want to tap into other professions. We have great training programs, could be much better, and we're working on that as well, but that's another topic. So if you have the right mindset and the right drive, you fit in here. You don't need to ever have touched a shovel a day in your life. We'll teach you how to do that work. But the right mindset will fit in here. And we've also found some of our guys that are making $20 to $25 an hour are doing double the work of somebody that's making $15 an hour. So they actually save us money. So if that's the trend that we have to go to, be half staffed with doubly productive people, sure, that's where we'll go. And we'll figure it all out. We're watching the numbers closely. I will say that we're watching exactly where our production numbers are. We're watching exactly where our labor numbers are. And we're going to push the envelope. And we are rolling out health insurance, hopefully this winter. We're in the process of that right now. Already offer retirement solutions for our employees that we match contributions. So we're giving back to our people above and beyond just the positive mindset that we've been talking about.
Well, and research shows that A players will get so much more done or so much more productive than a couple of B players. So it sounds like by hiring the top talent, paying them really well, you're going to get a lot more production capacity. So very interesting. Love the approach that you're taking to your business. I think it's really refreshing. I think you're the makings of a great coach. I'm sure you already are one within your own team. So, you know, 15 clients as, you know, or members in your coaching stable. Great stuff, Scott. Really fantastic. Thank you. You're active in your industry. You're active in your community. Both.
Yep. Yep. Active in both, getting more active in the industry. This year has been a year again with, the less operation load that I have. I have gotten involved in CIMA. I have gotten involved in NALP, started going to trade shows. We implemented Aspire for our management platform. So I've been involved in going to the Aspire conference, as well as interacting with a lot of people from Aspire, and just really want to give back within the community. I have been a volunteer firefighter for 17 years. I'm not very active with that right now. I am currently a the rank of a captain at a local department, but unfortunately, I, due to time commitments and family commitments, have not been giving that enough time. So that's an area I have to revisit in my personal life right now. It's a struggle for me, but that's been my method of giving back to the community. We also, my wife and I both donate to Pediatric Cancer Foundation. We're active in our church. And just walk around with smiles on our face. That it's the easiest way to spread good cheer is walk around with a smile on your face and say hi to somebody that maybe looks grumpy.
Great way to meet somebody too. Scott, if you'd like people to get a hold of you, what would be the best way for them to reach you?
Email would be great. You can email me at Scott, S-C-O-T-T, at Castle Rocks. That's K-A-S-E-L. ROCKS.com. Castle is spelled wrong because that is my last name backwards. And we started out as a boulder and hardscape company. So the Castle Rocks made sense at that point. Spinning the name backwards is the play on words. In retrospect, I wouldn't do it again because I have to spell it out like that every single time I tell people the name of my company. But that's where the creativity came from. And that's 100% on my dad. I'm not going to take credit for that one.
All right. Yeah. Throw him under the bus with that credit. I love that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's been thoroughly enjoyable having you on the show today. And thanks for sharing your good cheer and your good message and some of the sources from where you get that from and your own little, your own story. I hope it will be a value to other people as they think about how do they scale their business, that it can start with a positive mindset, as well as putting, of course, systems and processes into place, but an overall quality of life, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, financial, that makes for happy employees, engaged employees, and a happy leader. So,
absolutely. Well, thanks for having me, John. I really enjoyed this.
All right, folks, if you enjoyed this episode, please listen. Share it with others, subscribe, and if you have any great guests for our show, send them my way. Thank you very much.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at the goldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session.
Thank you for joining us on the Disruptive Successor Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, review, and share with a friend who would benefit from the message. If you're interested in picking up a copy of my book, Disruptive Successor, go to disruptivesuccessor.com.